Europe acknowledges the traditional owners of the land this podcast was recorded on. We pay our respect to their elders past, present, and emerging, and extend this to all First Nations people.
Welcome to AREP's podcast, Sustainable Forces, a podcast about people joining forces to help solve some of the most complex sustainable development challenges. I'm your host, Dr. Michelle Dickinson, and today we're diving into the relationship between greenhouse gas emissions and the property industry. Did you know that the property industry is one of the highest emitting sectors? In fact, the built environment is responsible for nearly 40% of global greenhouse gas emissions. So what is making this number so high? A big part of the issue lies in Scope 3 emissions, also known as indirect emissions, which occur across the value chain. These aren't created directly by organizations, but are inherited upstream through the production and transportation of materials, goods, and services, as well as downstream through activities like leasing and operating assets. Unlike Scope 1 emissions, which come from sources directly controlled by the organization, like fuel burned in vehicles, or Scope 2 emissions, which are within the organization's control, for example, purchased electricity, Scope 3 emissions are much harder to pinpoint because they're embedded in the complexity of the value chain. AREP and Lendlease have a long history of working together on innovative projects, and both organisations are now taking bold steps to accelerate the decarbonisation of the property industry, with a particular focus on tackling Scope 3 emissions. To learn more, I spoke with Kate Harris, Group Head of Sustainability and Lendlease Foundation at Lendlease, and Enrico Zara, AREP's Global Decarbonisation Leader. They shared valuable insights into why bold action and collaboration are key to driving meaningful change in the industry, especially when it comes to Scope 3 emissions. Here's my conversation with Kate and Enrico. I hope you find it as inspiring and thought-provoking as I did. Hi, Kate. Thank you for being here with us today. Could you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and about Lendlease and what you do there?
Sure thing, Michelle. Look, I'm the Group Head of Sustainability at Lendlease. For those of your listeners that are not familiar with Lendlease, we're an integrated real estate business. We leverage our integrated operations of investments, developments and construction to shape cities, create connected communities and deliver workplaces of the future. So in my role as Group Head of Sustainability, I'm responsible for our sustainability strategy and our targets across our Australian and our international operations. Coming into this role back in 2019, we worked with the business to help reset and focus our sustainability strategy for this next iteration of what has been a long journey for Lendlease in sustainability and the built environment. And we reset our strategy and we brought it to life through our ambitious environmental and social sustainability targets that we announced to the market in 2020. We are a 1.5 degree aligned company, which for us means that we will be net zero for our Scope 1 and 2 emissions in 2025 this year. And we'll be absolute zero emissions for Scope 1, 2 and 3 emissions. So no offsets, no excuses, absolute zero by 2040. We're also, we've set ourselves a target to create $250 million of social value by 2025 through the shared value partnerships that we manage and support through our Lendlease Foundation. I'm pleased to say that we're actually on track with our two first milestone targets, both our net zero for Scopes 1 and 2 this year, and also our $250 million worth of social value.
Congratulations. That's incredible. A lot to live up to there, Enro and Co. So Enrico, can you share a little bit about yourself and what you do at AREP?
Yeah. Hi, Michelle. Hi, Kate. So I've been doing different roles in AREP for more than 15 years, but currently I am the global decarbonization leader, which means that I look after the way we support our clients in their decarbonization journey. It's quite interesting for me doing this role. I started this probably now more than 3 years ago. And I see this as a multidisciplinary problem. So I'm part of the leadership of the climate and sustainability portfolio. And in this portfolio, we have all the different challenges that we look every day. So decarbonization, resilience and adaptations, nature, of course, but any other part of the business that need climate sustainability comes through the climate sustainability portfolio, and we help them working with their clients. In my specific role, what I do is really try to give decarbonization a way to attract all the different skills and needs that we have from different parts of our business. As companies need to decarbonize their operations, their developments, and really everything they do around net zero, my role is really to find, you know, what type of skill set we need. And so this goes from, you know, material expertise, you know, for low carbon materials, design expertise, you know, to find solutions that are innovative, circular, but also cost effective to deliver those targets that Kate was mentioning, for example. But also sometimes it's just about mapping emission, understanding, you know, what are the critical points, and really provide a structure and methodology to help our clients to do that. So my role is really trying to find, you know, in all of this complexity, what is the best way to streamline our services and making sure that, you know, we provide tailored solution for our clients.
Amazing. So then you're the perfect person to answer our next question, because today we're going to be talking about emissions that might be hiding in the value chain. They're referred to as scope 3 emissions. So if people don't know what scope 3 emissions are, can you tell us a little bit about them and why they're so important for decarbonizing the built environment?
If you didn't know, the Greenhouse Gas Protocol, that is the founding document that really defined what is scope 1, scope 2 and 3, was actually first released in 2001. So, you know, 23 years ago. So it is actually a pretty aged, if you want, document. But really, many years, companies have been focusing on scope 1 and scope 2. And scope 1 is all the emission that directly happen inside the boundary of an organization. For me, typically, I define them as the fossil fuel emissions. So, you know, natural gas, petrol, diesel, and any other emission related to gas emission, like refrigerants, for example, in air conditioning. Scope 2 is electricity. And again, that's another one that is quite easy to define. But really, scope 3 is where things become a little bit more complex, because the Greenhouse Gas Protocol defines as everything else. So in the everything else, there is space for all sorts of different emissions. And so what happened is that in 2011, there was a scope 3 standard that was released by the Greenhouse Gas Protocol again, and try to define and streamline, you know, 15 different categories that are included in scope 3. I think only in the last, I would say, 4 to 5 years, scope 3 came to prominence, if you want. And I think now is the moment where many organizations are really trying to understand, you know, what is included in their scope 3. So what is their everything else? But also, you know, how do they look to prioritize, understand, you know, which one are the different actions that they need to take. So really, scope 3 emission can be 70, 80, 90% sometimes of the total emission. So they are becoming very important. And the new requirement for reporting in many countries are going to ask different organizations to report their scope 3 emission, and their net zero target should include also scope 3 emission, like Kate just told us before.
Thank you, Enrico. So much detail. So, Kate, Lendlease is really tackling scope 3 emissions with this global reporting boundary called the Scope 3 Emission Protocol. Tell us a little bit about that. What is it and how is it working?
Yeah, look, well, with over 90% of our global greenhouse gas emissions attributable to scope 3 emissions, we felt compelled to make sure that scope 3 was a part of our target setting, and hence it's included in our absolute zero target for 2040. You know, as Enrico just sort of described, scope 3 emissions are those more challenging emissions, particularly in the built environment, where we don't have direct control over them. They're someone else's scope 1 and 2 emissions. You know, we have very large and complex supply chains, which makes it complicated. Data and getting reliable and verifiable scope 3 data from suppliers, etc., is still quite patchy and difficult to do sometimes. And there's no clear and consistent boundaries around scope 3 for our sector. So when we looked at the Greenhouse Gas Protocol, which is everyone's go-to in terms of defining those boundaries, whilst we all know that it's quite clear and specific for scope 1 and scope 2 boundary setting, still quite grey and fuzzy around the scope 3 boundaries. So we knew, having included Scope 3 in our target, which meant not only sort of focusing our efforts from an organisational perspective, but also helping our supply chain to focus their efforts and our tenants upstream as well, that we needed to provide that clarity to our business and to our partners in order to be able to set clear boundaries and be very specific about what we wanted to do from a decarbonisation perspective. So to provide that clear direction, we undertook a really rigorous, robust assessment. We looked at everything, all the detail that is in the GHG protocol, but we went well beyond that and looked at different ISO standards and different industry standards and did all the hard yards to look at what all of these other standards were doing in terms of identifying material elements of Scope 3 for whether you're an investment company, a developer or a constructor. And we compiled what we call the Lendlease Scope 3 protocol version 1. To basically encompass what we found there. And we've linked it back to obviously the categories that are set out in the GHG protocol. And we've been able to then sort of formulate and lay out very clearly, both for ourselves, our value chain partners, but also the broader industry, where we see the material elements and what's included in our boundary when we talk about measuring and reporting on our Scope 3 emissions as an investor, developer and constructor. And we've used that protocol then to actually go out to the industry to actually spark the conversation around trying to drive a consensus view around what the boundaries for Scope 3 should be for our sector. So it's our first attempt, which is why we call it version 1. And we're really hoping that we're going to get lots of feedback from others across our sector and across the markets we work in to help shape that and hopefully get to a point where we've all agreed and aligned on what we think those boundaries should be moving forwards.
Amazing. And it's been going for what, almost 12 months now? So can you give us a little bit of a snapshot of sort of what you've seen so far? Maybe some lessons learned or some of the big progresses and sort of celebrations that you have around it already.
Absolutely. So we made the decision early on, like with a lot of our Mission Zero, what we call it, our decarbonisation targets, we made the decision early to share a lot of our lessons learned along the way, whether that's case studies, whether that's research that we've undertaken around fossil fuel-free construction and, of course, the protocol. We launched that protocol, yes, just around 12 months ago, and we've been taking it here, there and everywhere and sharing it as broadly as we can. So we've seen fantastic engagement with industry groups across America and here in Australia and Asia and Europe. We've seen great take up and we've had some really good conversations with peers and competitors in the market as well around they're looking at the same sorts of challenges, and many have actually just sort of taken the protocol and used that as their starting point, so not reinventing the wheel, and then again helping to drive that consistency and approach. We've worked with groups like the Green Building Council here in Australia and Property Council and shared it broadly. And it's doing exactly what we hoped it would do. It's that catalyst for conversation early so that we can all start talking about the need to include Scope 3 in our targets and our ambition, but also to driving that clarity around how we define those reporting boundaries. Through that, we've also had some great interaction and engagement with supply chain partners as well. Being able to set very clear expectations with them around what we're looking for from a decarbonisation of their material sector, whether that's the steel or the concrete or glass and aluminium. We've been able to use the protocol again as an effective catalyst to have that conversation around what we're trying to do with our targets, and the role that we can play and the role that we need them to play in helping us achieve our goals and ambitions. So we've been innovating and being able to pilot some really exciting new products through some of those harder to abate that I now like to call ready to abate sectors of steel and concrete and aluminium and glass. So we've been already leveraging some of the great innovation and advancement that's happening in those sectors at the moment because we've declared that we want to set these sorts of targets for ourselves. And so they've been coming on board with that journey of piloting. And we've also been able to look at them practical tools that we can develop and share with our business to help them on this journey too. They're very aware of our targets and the role that they play. And so we've developed an in-house tool called LECA, our Lendlease Embodied Carbon Calculator, which actually helps our design and development teams assess the embodied carbon upfront really early on with our new project ideas so that they can make informed decisions very quickly and early around the different styles of construction and the implications then around the embodied carbon for those project proposals so that they can adjust accordingly early and make sure that the right materials and the right performance specifications are being built into project specifications right from the get-go. So we've seen some incredible advancements and decarbonisation happening already, which is really exciting.
Congratulations for only being 12 months in. That's huge progress. And Eriko, you've been building momentum in this space too by helping organizations to even understand how to measure and reduce their scope 3 emissions. So can you share maybe some of the benefits that you've found by doing this with other organizations, as well as any lessons learned?
Yeah, definitely. I would say the leadership that demonstrated by Lendlease and the CASE team and writing this type of document, I think this is very helpful because what we do, we actually help clients and organizations that are from all different sectors, you know, from transport to the built environment to healthcare, education. And I think, you know, having somebody with leadership that can show, you know, this is a precedent, this is something that we have learned and share with others is really important. And actually, this is something that we do as well in our work. So we partner with the organization, but also, you know, with nonprofit to define, you know, what is the first opportunity, you know, to define a template or a model, something that can be reused. And I would say that in this work, we learn every day. So there is not, I would say, a solution that covers every aspect. Every organization is different and every scope 3 is different as well. So I would say, you know, coming back to those 15 categories, I would say in the built environment, goods and services is generally a very big category because that includes all the different procurement items that are in the books of a company. So you can imagine that, you know, any company, you know, especially global company that have very large operation, they are very complex and interconnected the supply chains. So mapping that, for example, it just takes quite a lot of effort to understand, you know, all the different procurement activities. You know, sometimes these activities are not centralized. So really mapping with the organization stakeholders, you know, how the different goods and services are actually procured. And, you know, if there is a way to understand, you know, beyond the quantity of the capital that have been invested, you know, if there are quantities, like, for example, you know, a big limitation that we see now in scope 3 is that we usually use a factor that translate the dollar spent in a certain category to carbon emission. But that's a first approximation. But the second step is trying to understand, you know, what did you buy with that specific procurement area? So, for example, this could be a certain type of material or a certain service. And so the next step is understanding, you know, can we quantify, you know, what type of material it was and getting better and more precise information. So I would say this is some of the lesson learned that we are learning, is that really, how do we help organizations starting to track from these procurement areas, for example, not only the cost, but also the quantities, breaking down by typology, so that it becomes easier for them in the future to understand their emission. So I would say we have been doing this across different areas. And another lesson learned that we see, for example, in healthcare or education, so, you know, big services that are provided, is that they're very specific. In healthcare, for example, you know, there are all so many different specialized services that are procured in this process, medical equipment, pharmaceutical, you know, there is a long list of names that we discover, you know, during this work. And I think, you know, the first time you do it is very complex and could be really overwhelming. And so that's why, you know, it's really important to share lesson learned. And I know that our team was involved in writing a paper about healthcare. And that's really where, you know, sharing lesson learned and collaborating with the rest of the industry becomes so important.
Oh, I love sharing. And this podcast is always about the power of partnership. And Lendlease and Arup have been working together on global projects for decades. We've already heard a little bit about how important global collaboration is if we want to drive industry forward. So I want to talk about the power of partnership to each of you. I'm going to start with you, Kate. You've been working on a project called the Barangaroo Project in Sydney. Can you share a little bit about this?
I can. Look, Barangaroo is has been a fantastic catalyst in terms of demonstrating the power of setting bold, ambitious sustainability targets and using those targets as a rallying point for all of those concerned with the project. And, you know, when we won the Barangaroo development project, you know, over 10, close to 15 years ago now, we set a whole new bunch of sustainability ambition and target around creating a climate positive precinct at the time. So it was going to be the first precinct of its kind globally to achieve carbon neutral status amongst a whole other raft of sustainability credentials. And included in that was a target to reduce embodied carbon with the project by 20%. We worked with fantastic organisations like AREP on this project in terms of bringing some of the best minds to some of these really challenging problems, because when we won the project, we didn't necessarily have all the solutions just yet to actually achieve those incredible targets. But we knew that if we set the flag high, then we could really, you know, mobilise all of our best efforts behind certainly making our best level of progress towards, if not achieving, and really setting a new benchmark, which is in fact what we've been able to do at Barangaroo in Sydney. But for me, it's, you know, it's about how you can use that and build upon that each time. And in all honesty, I think the fact that we were able to achieve such incredible outcomes on Barangaroo really gave our leadership team the confidence to then actually choose to embark on this new set of targets, which again has sort of set world-leading examples, particularly with our absolute zero target, with its inclusion of scope 3, setting a benchmark timeframe around 2040, and, you know, looking at ways to actually eliminate carbon from our value chain, not just offset it. So for me, partnership is critical to all of this, as you said, Michelle. And I think when I look at partnerships, for me, is there's sort of three layers to that. There's the direct partnerships that we have with, you know, our consultants like AREP and our supply chain partners, the tenants that ultimately come into the buildings that we create, et cetera, and working with them to support, you know, innovation with our supply chain partners and the materials that they're now decarbing and bringing to market and providing opportunities to pilot and test those with them to give them the strong, clear market signal that decarbonised product is what we want and we need now, and that business as usual is not going to get us there. Then there's this sort of second layer of industry partnership and broadening out those partnerships and engagement to our industry associations and partners. So groups like MECLA here in Australia, the Materials and Embodied Carbon Alliance, Leadership Alliance, have been instrumental in bringing together all the players across the construction development sector to look at what the challenges of scope 3 are and to really start to look at the different mechanisms and roles that we can all play in breaking those barriers down and accelerating the decarbonisation of our materials sector within construction in Australia. Responsible Steel, which I'm a board member for as well. Lendlease are a business member of Responsible Steel, and looking at how we can drive out consistent standards and certification schemes for products like steel to drive a more sustainable, responsible delivery and manufacture of those materials. So getting involved in those sorts of initiatives is really powerful and important too, to amplify the market signal for decarbonisation and to create and share all of those case studies and that important lessons learned and knowledge sharing. And then finally, for me, partnerships too is also those indirect partnerships. Is what can we learn from other sectors that we can bring into our own sector? You know, what lessons can we leverage? And that's where we've joined groups like the WBCSD and their PACT initiative to look at how you can, you know, open source potentially scope 3 data and improve access to data across our very large and complex supply chain in construction. And we look to other sectors like the automotive sector who have been able to do that in recent times through initiatives like Catena X, where they have created that open source platform for the automotive sector's supply chain to share their scope 3 data or their scope 1 and 2 data, so that all of the big auto players can actually access consistent and reliable data to really have a granularity now around the analysis of their scope 3 impacts, and so where they need to focus their efforts, what kind of mechanisms they can put into play to continue to drive the decarbonisation to achieve the outcomes that they're looking to do. So yeah, partnerships absolutely critical if we're going to address the challenge of scope 3.
Amazing. And Enrico, you've been partnering not just with Lendlease, but many other sectors and organizations. So can you talk a little bit about what you've learned around the power of partnership?
Yeah, and I think it's very it's very telling, this view of having, you know, three different layers of partnerships. And I think also in Europe we have a different way of looking at partnerships, because we have global partners. And with this global partner, like, for example, the World Building Council for Sustainable Development, we have been doing, for example, studies and paper to help the industry understanding, you know, the hololife carbon in projects and how this hololife carbon reduction can help reducing scope 3 emissions for developer, property owner, and the construction industry in general. And I would say this type of global organization partnership is a way for us to find across the globe in our different projects and activities, and Barrancrew, of course, has been one of those, what is best practice, what does it look like in practice, what is feasible, what may need to be postponed for a couple of years, what is cost effective today, and really making that knowledge available globally. Because sometimes, you know, the lesson learned happen in different places in the world. Sometimes Europe is leading, sometimes, you know, Asia, sometimes the Americas, and sometimes also Australia. And I think, you know, the power of partnership is really collecting that knowledge and making it available for a large audience. The other type of partnership, of course, is at more local level. And MECLA, of course, AROP has been working with Unleash and other organization in that forum, have a more, I would say, practical and direct impact. Because what we notice is that sometimes there is quite a lot of interest in the industry, but that interest is not really supported by availability of information or by having channels where, for example, you know, developer can talk with suppliers, consultant can talk with the contractor outside the context of a specific project. So I would say that for example, MECLA has been very powerful because there has been a really good integration of knowledge across all the value chain of construction. And this has been happening, for example, for the key material like concrete, steel, aluminium, timber, and others. So there was the knowledge of the suppliers, you know, very practical, very related to the actual material limitation, but also opportunities, the knowledge for the consultant that usually is more about, you know, setting aspiration, setting, you know, how do we need this material to perform so that they can help us meeting our targets and delivering more and more sustainable projects. But on the other end, you also need, you know, developer, contractor that have also the cost, the practical knowledge, how to deliver this project, how to use these materials. So creating this collaboration partnership where there is a platform for different type of knowledge to come together and really break the barriers that often we have in the industry is really important. And there are many of these organizations, of course, like the World Green Building Councils, and the local version of the Green Building Council that we have in many countries is also a very powerful opportunity, you know, to engage for us and to provide, you know, recommendation, share best practice. I would say in the context of Scope 3, there is also, you know, to understand that different sector, they have a slightly different needs. So, for example, a few years ago, we partnered with the Healthcare Without Harm, which is a global organization focused on increasing sustainability in healthcare. And the study that we did a few years ago about creating a template for the decarbonization of the healthcare sector has been recently used in other countries, like in Australia, where we helped, for example, government organization translating those learning that were created, you know, from the healthcare sector in the UK, and now have been implemented also in different countries. And so I would say that process of adapting, you know, global knowledge to the local point of need is really important, because it can really save quite a lot of time and really making sure that we all progress on the same need to make net zero possible, but also, you know, cost effective, because that's probably one of the key challenges. How do we make this possible and practical?
Look, it's been so interesting. We're almost out of time, and you've already shared so much of your wisdom and so many insights. But this is our top tip section of the podcast, where anybody who's listening who maybe wants to start thinking about Scope 3 or start thinking about how do you measure or what do you measure, this is where you get to really help them. So, Kate, I'm going to start with you. What are your top tips for people wanting to start in this space?
Number one for me, Michelle, is set ambitious targets. Business as usual is not going to get us where we need to be, and it's not going to create the transformation that's necessary at pace and at scale for us to tackle the climate agenda. then include those targets in your specifications, whether you're setting the project agenda and you're going to be the end client and customer, set the specifications and the benchmarks early, or indeed if you're procuring supplies, materials, etc. with your supply chain, again, build those specifications in that align to those ambitious targets. Don't reinvent the wheel. We've done lots of the hard yards and hard yakka for you. So if you're at the start of your journey, then take advantage of what's already been done and is being shared openly. So things like our Scope 3 protocol are a great starting point if you're just kicking off on your journey. And in fact, even if you've started that journey and you want to check in and see how others are doing it and be able to easily identify those material aspects of our value chain across the investment, development and construction sectors, it's a good starting point. And then I guess, share your progress. We've learned through sharing our progress that you create quite a transparent way of reporting. It sets the expectations and the agenda very clearly with all your stakeholders involved. And what's interesting is that when you start to share, then others quite willingly then start to share with you, and you can learn a lot get different inside tips and helpful knowledge that you can take forward and continue to sort of leverage. I quite often say that the race to zero, it's a race that no one individual is going to win. We have to win it all together if we're to actually achieve what we're all setting out to do here, which is to limit the impacts of global warming and address the climate crisis. So share your knowledge with others and just start. Just make a start. Don't put it off any longer. We can't afford to waste time.
Amazing. Start today. Enrico, do you have any top tips to share that are different from Kate's?
Yeah, I would say probably when we do this type of work, one of the aspects that generally our clients are quite surprised to learn is about focusing. Because, Scope 3 emission can be really daunting in terms of, how many typology you have. And, the list can be very long. All the activity that you could do about your Scope 3 emission is really overwhelming. So we usually say, pick maximum five hotspots and really start to work on those, because that's really where you can start to make progress, really focusing on those areas where the emissions are larger, where you have more influence, where you have more opportunity to work with your value chain, being upstream or downstream. That's really our top recommendation. If you can focus, you can really make progress, and progress will give you also more impact in your organization, and you can ask, to get more people involved in the next steps. The second part is probably also thinking that it is true, Scope 3 calculation can be quite complex. There are so many different factors that can be used. But actually, if you're just starting in your journey, just consider that basically investments and capital costs and everything that goes in your procurement is actually a good proxy of your Scope 3 emission. So even looking at how every year, an organization spend in different part of the activities, could be operation, could be procurement, could be delivery of projects, transport, every organization is different. But that breakdown of cost, from the largest to the smallest, is actually a good way to start thinking, which one are my hotspots, even before doing a carbon footprint. So that could be a way just to get started and start to think about, what Scope 3 means for me at the end of the day.
Incredible. So basically, get started, start measuring, start sharing, and we all need to be doing this together. I'm afraid, sadly, we're out of time. Thank you so much, Kate and Enrico, for joining us. We've learned so much about Scope 3 emissions, and hopefully people can get started on their journey.
Thanks very much for the conversation, Michelle and Enrico.
Yeah, thank you both. It has been great to learn a bit more what Lendlease is doing. And thank you, Michelle, for facilitating this conversation.
I really enjoyed that conversation and came away with a deeper understanding and appreciation for how Scope 3 emissions are evolving into a research field of their own. It's also inspiring to see organizations like Lendlease and Arup developing practical tools and methodologies to make managing these emissions easier for others. In our next episode, we'll take this discussion a step further. I'll be joined by Fleming Voetman, Vice President of External Relations and Sustainability at Velux, and Martin Powley, Arup's Global Circular Economy Services Leader, to explore the question, what makes a building material sustainable? If you enjoyed this episode, please leave us a review and subscribe to Sustainable Forces on your favorite streaming platform.